Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. Welcome back to the CBS Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent. And don't forget, while you're here, to also subscribe to the CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel. Let's get into it. I don't know if you've been paying attention, but a whole bunch of top 10 teams have lost over the past week. Number one, Purdue has lost. Number two, Houston has lost. Number three, Kansas has lost. Number five, Tennessee has lost. Number six, Kentucky has lost. Number eight, Arizona has lost. Number nine, Oklahoma has lost, and number 10, Illinois has lost. 80% of the top 10 in the AP poll took a loss in the past week, but number four, UConn did not, and number seven, North Carolina did not. Deadleg, we've talked a lot about UConn so far this season. I don't think we've spent much time on North Carolina, so let's open on North Carolina, the Tar Heels. 13-3 overall, they're now 5-0 in the ACC, alone up the league standings. Six-game winning streak, they haven't lost since the CBS Sports Classic down in Atlanta. That was December 16th, nearly a month ago. UNC now sixth at KenPom, seventh in strength of record, seventh in the net. They were only 19th in the preseason AP poll. Here's my question for you. Is this one of those deals where we overrated North Carolina last season based on what happened the season before, and then we turn right around and underrated North Carolina this season based on what happened the season before?
Based on where we are right now, that seems to be the case. We'll see if it winds up being true once we get to March. But particularly after this kind of week, and Parrish just laid it out, with so many teams in the top 10 losing, I got a Jared Burson special for you, too. You might have seen it. But Jared Burson, stats guru, College Hoops, he sent out word that eight top 10 teams losing on the road this week to unranked teams marked the first time since February of 92 that top 10 teams lost at least eight times on the road. They went 1-8 back in that week. This week, top 10 teams were 4-8 after Memphis was able to get it done. Or Memphis not a top 10 team. 3-8. Memphis did win on the road earlier on Sunday. So to your point with Carolina, Carolina and UConn were the two teams in the top 10 that got out of this week unscathed. And so because of that, AP poll will refresh on Monday, and UNC will likely scoot up and probably should scoot up. It's certainly been playing as better than the 19th best team and is looking damn good. It's this win streak that it's on. You said it hasn't lost since the CBS Sports Classic. Is that right, GP?
That's right. Lost to Kentucky at the CBS Sports Classic. Has not lost since. Six wins in a row.
So it's 5-0 in the ACC. It's in the driver's seat in the ACC right now. In that six-game stretch, 60.3 points per game allowed for the Tar Heels. They are getting it done with defense more than anything else and committing fewer than 10 turnovers per game over that stretch. So holding teams to a relatively low number there, of course, and then not giving away has been huge in that. They dropping 103 on Syracuse. You know, sometimes these teams get these wins, and they can get it in kind of like laugh or blowout fashion. You look up and it's like, okay, whatever. It's an 85-62 kind of win. I mean, you get 103 on, and Syracuse isn't going to go to the tournament. I get all that. But this was Syracuse's largest loss in a conference game since 2006. Shockingly enough, they dropped a game back in 06. Syracuse did to DePaul by 39. That's when DePaul really meant something. We miss those days. 06 DePaul was no joke. So that was the last time Syracuse lost a game by a margin close to what it did against UNC on Saturday. Give Carolina credit. We'll go big picture, microcosm. In the micro, they had 58 points in the paint. They basically did whatever they wanted to. RJ Davis returned to life. He had 22 points. That was a game high. He had 4 3-pointers. Armando Bacot had a double-double. And they are winning the games they should win, and sometimes they're winning them beyond measures we would even expect there. They are moving toward like that top five status. I hesitate just a little bit because, as I said on HQ Saturday, UNC and UConn, they didn't get caught up this week, but almost everyone certainly will. UConn's already had, obviously, some bumps. It took the road loss against Seton Hall and all that stuff. So I still think that's probably likely to come for Carolina. But as the title here for this YouTube video suggests, Final Four is now on the table for UNC. It is now in that discussion for Carolina fans. They might have felt like they were there a week or two ago, but got to see how you can build it out in league play. I have them there. I mean, there's a lot of Final Four candidates, but this is a nice turnaround for a team that had some more inconsistencies earlier in the season. I remember trying to get some explanations out of Hubert Davis, and he didn't have any for me when UNC got overwhelmed against UConn at the Garden. But since then, he and that staff have figured some stuff out. Good on the Tar Heels. They look like the best team in the ACC right now.
Yeah, they're 5-3 in quadrant one with zero additional losses. There are other teams with as many quadrant one wins. Kansas also has 5. Arizona also has 5, but only Purdue has more with 6. So Carolina is in elite company when it comes to quality win. The victories, the notable ones, they beat Tennessee, beat Oklahoma, they've beaten Clemson. That right there is 3 wins over top 30 net teams. The losses are to UConn, Kentucky, Villanova. They're all away from home. So 0 losses to sub 35 net teams. It's a good resume. I moved North Carolina up to number 4 in Sunday morning's top 25 and 1. I've got Purdue 1, Connecticut 2, Kansas 3, North Carolina at 4, and Tennessee at 5. Just to contrast it with last year, 13-3 right now, 5-0 in the ACC. It's January 14th. A year ago on this day, January 14th, 2023, they were 11-6 overall, 4-3 in the ACC, and on their way to missing the NCAA tournament after being ranked preseason number 1. So this season is going more smoothly, and a lot of it is because of RJ Davis. He's taken another jump. Career high 20.4 points per game, shooting 43.2% from the field, a career high 41% from 3 on 7.3 attempts per game. Like, from a statistical standpoint, Armando Bacot is mostly the same player. Points slightly down, but that's because attempts are slightly down. Field goal percentage slightly down. The 10.8 rebounds per game for him, it's slightly up from last season, but still down from 2 seasons ago. He's much better from the free throw line than he's ever been. He's nearly at 80%. But the real statistical, the guy who took a leap on that roster is RJ Davis. He's been their best player this season. And one of the best players in the country. Let me ask you this. Do you buy this? And I don't mean this as a shot at anybody, because it could be a shot at one person and then a compliment right back at the same person. Do you think North Carolina is a top 10 team because it lost Caleb Love, and Arizona is a top 10 team in part because it got Caleb Love?
I think there's definitely something to that. We'll get to Arizona here because it's not as rosy at the moment down there in Tucson. But yeah, I think that's part of it. I also think that RJ Davis had a little more canvas to paint on this season, and the complimentary pieces like Harrison Ingram and what he has given this team is obvious. He is a very good, well-rounded offensive player, and so his addition has almost emboldened Davis all the more, and he knows that Cormac Ryan stepped in, played well. Cadeau continues to get better. So Davis has been the team's best player. Many thought that would be Bacot. Davis was well established coming into this, but now he's building out an All-American season. And because of that, I kind of repeat here. To me, it's UNC slightly in the driver's seat in the ACC over Duke. It's just UNC. Look up and hello, here we are. It's just UNC. From a metrics perspective, it is UNC and Duke. In the standings right now, Carolina is the only ACC team without a loss. Meanwhile, Duke, NC State, Wake, and hello, Florida State. Yes. Now, sometimes this is subject to the schedule, but credit to Leonard Hamilton's team. All of those teams are at 4-1 in the ACC behind UNC, which is 5-0. But I think it is just as much about what UNC's roster has been able to do around RJ and losing Caleb. But I would say it's more impactful Caleb going to Arizona than UNC losing him.
Yeah, but I just thought it's interesting. Like, you can't just, if it is addition by subtraction at North Carolina, then it's addition by addition at Arizona. You know, because both of those teams are Final Four contenders, and North Carolina looks like a better version of North Carolina the year after Caleb Love's not there, and Arizona looks like a Final Four contender. In part because Caleb Love is there. I don't think Arizona would be as good as it's been this season, if not for Caleb Love. For North Carolina, up next, it's at Louisville at home on Wednesday. Then it's Boston. So this is the week for them, Louisville and Boston College. After that, Wake Forest, Florida State, Georgia Tech. So the Tar Heels aren't going to play another ranked team until they host Duke on February 3rd. So they could keep this thing rolling for a bit.
Maybe Wake gets there. I don't know. But yeah, as it stands right now.
How about this? They will not play another currently ranked team until February 3rd when they host Duke. So they could, the 6-game winning streak could turn into 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 game winning streak pretty reasonably.
Yeah, no, they're looking good. And what a breath of fresh air this must be for UNC fans after the up and down of last season. Teams really got it going, and as fun as Davis can be and Ingram, and Baycott is just, he is a reliable guy in the paint for the most part. It is the defense. They are tapping into something here where their defense is stepping up in a big way. And this is a big jump because the first two seasons under Hubert Davis were not like this defensively at all. And something has changed here. We'll see if they can keep it up.
Top of the ACC. If you looked at the Big 12 lately, the standings are wild. Undeniably best league in the country. Standings goofy through three games for everybody. We'll get into that next. But first, quick, a word from our partners.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
We are 3 games into the Big 12 schedule, and the standings are all over the place. Right now, tied for first, Baylor and Texas Tech are both 3-0 in the league. Scott Drew, Grant McCaslin, the Baylor coaching tree is strong. Tied for third, we have 4 teams, Iowa State, Kansas State, and TCU, all with 2-1 records. And then we've got a slew of teams tied for seventh with 1-2 records, BYU, Houston, Oklahoma, Cincinnati, Texas, UCF, West Virginia. Down there at the bottom all by itself, yeah, Oklahoma State Cowboys at 0-3. Houston, right now, dead leg, is ranked number 1 at KenPom, tied for 7th in the Big 12. What do you make of what we're looking at right now?
Well, on some level, this can't be surprising, right? Because it's the toughest league, and you're having teams take road losses across the country, ranked or unranked. Trivia time!
Okay, come on, let's go.
Get it here. There were only 3 ranked teams that played on the road in the past 7 days and did not lose. Can you name the 3 teams?
Memphis.
Four teams. Memphis is the fourth. I did this trivia time last night, and then I have update Memphis, so it's four. So Memphis is one of them, yes.
Illinois?
No. I don't think so.
Wow. Should have been.
Yeah.
Wisconsin?
Wisconsin's one, yes.
Let me look at ranked teams. North Carolina.
North Carolina is one of them, yes. And there's one more.
One more.
And Illinois didn't play on the road. You made me fact check. Illinois did not play on the road this week, so they don't apply to the question.
Well, they could have.
They played at home and they lost to Maryland, so we'll get there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I forgot. That's my bad.
Memphis, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Did you give me any other teams?
I'm about to give you another team. The other team is clearly Iowa State.
Don't believe it had a road game. The other two teams are UConn and Duke. So only four teams ranked played on the road this week and did not take a loss. Memphis, Wisconsin, UConn, Duke. Anyone in the Big 12, stand up if it applies to you. It doesn't. So that just speaks to the strength of the league overall. Guess we'll open on the Kansas game here because it was a top 10 matchup ranked on rank. Kansas has won 24 in a row against Oklahoma in Fog Allen Fieldhouse. The Sooners have not won in that building since 1993. And the thing about it is that Kansas won this game despite having its worst three-point night of the season, only made 3 out of 15 three-pointers, but it only had two turnovers. Another big game from Hunter Dickinson. And in terms of the Big 12 and what we're going to wait and see on here, Oklahoma is 1-9 on the road in its past 10 games. Just keep an eye on that because in theory, Oklahoma, I guess, could split and go undefeated at home and not win a game on the road. And would that be enough to get it into the tournament? I actually probably think that it would. But Sooners might need to steal a couple here on the road in the best league in the country. And they don't have a good recent track record. So we'll see if they can turn that around elsewhere. And then I'll throw it back to you. Houston losing another game. Not a surprise. You and I both picked TCU. You and I both went 4-1 in the final 4-1. And for Houston now to drop two road games, they're understandable because it's Iowa State and it's TCU. Both teams tracking toward NCAA tournament inclusion there. TCU now at 13-3 overall. Houston had won 12 straight road games. That is now done. The longest streak in America for road games is VCU at 10 among high majors. It's the team we just talked about. UNC is the longest road streak among high majors in the country with 5 straight road wins. No real shame here from Houston as far as I'm concerned. TCU was roaring and ready. It's responded well from that Kansas loss a week ago to beat Oklahoma and Houston. And Emmanuel Miller, a little bit unsung. I mean, certainly, I guess, a well-known player. I mean, he's been doing his thing for a while, averaging 17.6 boards and is a 50% shooter. He came up big late in that game, and that was a big win for TCU. How we break down the hierarchy of this league, GP, I guess this is where it gets interesting because you look at the standings, Baylor and Texas Tech, you actually take a scratch. Congrats to Grant McCaslin for doing what he's been able to do. 14-2, getting a home win over K-State. We'll see. Like, it's Texas Tech has a road win against Texas, which lost at West Virginia, by the way. You take a look at Texas. How about this for a weird one? Ranked, it's going to drop out Monday. But it's the rare case here where a team is ranked middle of January, right, GP? Second week of January, however you want to define it. And then halfway through a season, it doesn't really have a tournament resume. I don't know if Texas would be in the field if we started today, if we really dig into it. If it did, maybe Dayton territory there. But Texas Tech has the win at Texas, win over Oklahoma State, win against Kansas State. My point is, it's a good start. No guarantee any of those teams make the tournament. We'll see. Doesn't matter. Your new coach, first year, 14-2. The Big 12 is, what do you want? It's an absolute beast here. And I thought it was an intriguing weekend in terms of results there because some stuff reinforced what we believed. And then there's a couple of surprise teams. And I think Tech would qualify there. And then the Texas loss at West Virginia is kind of the eye opener. Like, what do we have there in Austin right now? And are they going to be able to get things going? Because right now, I think there's, with that relatively healthy record, if you really dig in, GP, there's not a lot of meat on that bone.
Yeah, I would expect Texas to drop out of the top 25 of the AP poll. I would expect TCU to move in. TCU got two top 10 wins this week. I moved them into 25th of the top 25 and won. The Horned Frogs should be ranked on Monday. I'm not worried about Houston. I dropped them, obviously, but not too far. I think they're sixth now in the top 25 and won, one spot ahead of Memphis. You know, that's just like, you're not going to have many weeks in your Big 12 schedule where you've got to go play two road games against likely NCAA tournament teams. But when you do, I don't care if you're Kansas, Houston, Baylor, Oklahoma, Texas Tech, it does not matter. Any of those teams, if you give them two road games against NCAA tournament teams in the same week, they might go 0-2. Like, you could go 0-2 in that stretch and still be a legitimate Final Four contender. And that's all I think that happened to Houston. You'd rather split them or win them both, but a lot of people would go 0-2 in the stretch that Houston just played. For what it's worth, KenPom still projects Houston to win the league with a 13-5 record. Got Baylor at second, 12-6. Then a three-way tie for third, Texas Tech, Iowa State, BYU, 11-7. And then Kansas, TCU, Oklahoma at 10-8. That means KenPom's currently projecting Kansas to finish tied for sixth in the Big 12 with a 10-8 league record. Oh. That's disrespectful.
How about that? Hard to envision, right? As good as the league is, hard to envision that actually wind up being the case, but that's the projection there. Houston is still number one in every mainstream predictive metric across the board, net included. And it's good to have that balance because the results should matter, and they do. But predictive still in on Houston. Now, the gap is definitely narrowed here. You got Houston, then you got your likes of Purdue, Auburn's up there. Carolina's climbing. Arizona is still in that conversation, even with its recent loss there. Big 12's a whole lot of fun, but I think the most meaningful result of the weekend, I almost think it was Kansas, because Kansas, you know, and the game was on ESPN Plus, so maybe some of our audience wasn't able to watch it. It was a 78-66 win. And as I said before, like, Dickinson did his thing. DeJuan Harris played extremely well. And Furphy wound up starting, by the way. El Marco Jackson, who we had talked about, wound up coming off the bench. They both played like 18, 19 minutes apiece there. But they got it done. And it's a tough ask for Oklahoma to go in that building with Kansas coming off the loss against UCF. But just to kind of course correct a little bit here, and get the win, 14-2 overall, 2-1 in the league. It's not a surprise. I don't know. I was curious to see what kind of Kansas team we were going to get. And to me, I watched the game. Oklahoma gave it a good go, but as it went down the stretch, it seemed to be in the most command. I would put the most stock in that. If you want to say Texas Tech, I get it. That team has not lost since November, and they get the home win there. So now they're establishing. Maybe they're going to be the one that pops out of it. It might well be the case. I don't know. We wait and see on that. Someone in the chat, I will mention this team that we didn't bring up yet. Someone mentioned Cincinnati. They're 1-2, and they could be 3-0. That is true. They have the road win against BYU. They shouldn't have lost the game to Texas. And then they went down there and they played a hell of a good game on Saturday night against Baylor. The Bears wound up winning 62-59. Just get used to it, man. The Big 12 is the best television in the sport because every freaking night, man, there's at least one got to see a game. And as the case on Saturday, we said we had like four or five of those bad boys.
So we've talked North Carolina. We've talked the Big 12. Norlander is going to let us know what else we need to know from the weekend next. But first, one more word from our partners.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, Deadleg. What else happened this weekend that mattered?
All right, let's bump up this whole itinerary here, because we're going to lead on Maryland at the top. It won 76-67 against Illinois right before we came on the air here, and that's a notable win for Maryland because it is a resume adjuster. Now, the Terps did not have an NCAA tournament resume coming in. This is a quad one win. Jameer Young had 28 points, 8 assists. Julian Reese had 20 and 11, 11 being the boards there. Maryland gets level in the Big Ten. They're 3-3. They have had the Illini's number. They've won like 10 out of the past 12 or 13 games against the Fighting Illini. So whatever it is about these two schools, Maryland has come out on top, and that trend certainly continued on Saturday. And as a result of that, Parrish, Wisconsin now has a two game lead in the Big Ten. So Bucky has not had a 5-0 start as it has now in 16 seasons until now. But by nature of this Maryland upset against Illinois, it has given, because remember, Purdue, which still rates as the best team in the conference comfortably, it has the roadie L's against Northwestern and Nebraska. So yes, it's sitting there. Purdue, Indiana, Illinois, Northwestern, and Minnesota all have two losses. Meanwhile, Wisconsin, which has only lost once since November 14th, and it was that game. It got absolutely destroyed against Arizona back in the second week of December. Wisconsin at 13-3, 5-0 overall, has some real comfortability in the Big Ten. Any thoughts on Bucky or what happened right before we jumped on the air here with Maryland getting that win?
Well, listen, I just wrote it a few days ago. It feels like how Illinois had held it together pretty well, you know, in the absence of Terrence Shannon. But eventually, that is the type of thing that catches up to you, right? And I always assumed they would start falling back to the pack a little bit, and maybe this is the first real sign of that. As for Wisconsin, somebody tweeted me middle of last week, just noting that, you know, every time the AP poll comes out, somebody's like, you got to bring back the poll tax. You know, I almost want to, I'm like that Nick Saban meme, right? Like, I'm not going to do it. So quit asking.
Stop asking. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I'm almost asking. So quit asking. But the question was simple. Like, hey, there are three AP voters who left Wisconsin completely off their ballot. Can that be justified? They were actually like maybe requesting more of a just insight as opposed to an actual poll attack. And I looked at it and I was like, no, it can't be justified. Like, I don't remember where they were then, but like, it just updated. It's just a better version of where they were, but like, they were already in a good place. They're now 4-3 in quadrant one, 4-0 in quadrant two, 8-3 in the first two quadrants with zero additional losses. And again, all the losses falling in quadrant one. Got 6 wins over top 50 KenPom teams. Like, that's a strong resume. I've got Wisconsin in the top 10 of the top 25 in one. Let me make sure I've got it exactly right where I have them. I've got them up to 8th in the top 25 and one. I still think Purdue is going to win the Big Ten, probably by multiple games, but maybe not. Maybe Wisconsin can be a worthy challenger to the Boilermakers.
They have, by nature, yeah, I think they've, in getting the win over the weekend and continuing to build out their resume, I think Wisconsin has opened up the possibility here. We'll see if they can continue with this of making an interesting situation. Now, they beat Northwestern. Northwestern's a solid team, but it wasn't a road game there. Wisconsin has road wins against Michigan State and Ohio State in the league. Its next game is Tuesday at Penn State. Then it's home against Indiana. Then it's at Minnesota. So, and then after that, it's got the return home game against Michigan State. We'll see. It's looking pretty decent for Wisconsin right now. I will still lean Purdue, but at least it's intriguing. Let's get to the most exciting game on Saturday. Texas A&M won against Kentucky in overtime. Certainly a thrilling game, a game that arguably shouldn't even gotten to overtime because it seemed like there was something of a phantom foul called against A&M on Reed Shepherd, who flashed a little bit of a grin before stepping to the line and coolly sinking 2 foul shots to get it to the bonus session. A&M wins 97-92. It's the second resume win. I take that back. It's probably the third resume win for A&M this season. Get the one against Kentucky. They already had one against Iowa State. They won against Ohio State. That's probably going to be probably worth something down the way. They also have a road one against SMU. They had been up and down all season. It was the only time, by the way, A&M had won against Kentucky when Kentucky was in the top 10 ever. So a little bit of program history there. And it was A&M's first ranked win of the season, getting a victory over a team that was ranked at the time. GP, Kentucky's 6-game win streak is over. Thoughts on the game, thoughts on Wade Taylor and Tyrese Radford, like doing what I thought they would do more often than not. And they are such a good duo, but Taylor had 31, Radford had 28. They were outstanding, but yeah. Any, thoughts, takeaways?
It was a fun game. I was going to say, I'm glad A&M won. I don't mean it like that. I don't get twisted a million different directions. I don't mean I'm glad A&M won. I'm just like, I would hate to see a team lose after there was such questionable calls late in a game that they seemingly had under control. I think the right team won. I guess that's what I'm saying. For Kentucky, I dropped them down to 15th in the top 25 and one. UK fans seem very offended by this.
Where were they prior? Do you remember? Were they like, are we talking like a 6-15 drop? Something like
that? It was like a maybe an 8-15 drop, something like that, perhaps. But it's, you know, like I've explained a million times, and I can explain it another million times and it will not matter. But I don't get caught up on how far somebody dropped. I just look at your body of work and go, okay, where does this belong today? And when you start looking at Kentucky, there's not much there. Like,
right, let me bring it up, because I haven't. Let me look here. Let me lay it out. Unless you want to lay it out, because I'm looking.
I mean, I've got it. I mean, first off, just some basic numbers. They're 26th in strength of record. They're 18th in the net, 18th at KenPom, 23rd at Torvik. All right. So I've got them 15th.
Okay.
All the computers got them lower than I got them.
A good nugget. Okay.
They're 2-2 in quadrant one, only 1-0 in quadrant two. So they're just 3-2 in the first two quadrants, with a quadrant three loss to Wilmington at home. They've got a big and great win over North Carolina on a neutral, but their second best win is over Florida. So both these things can be true. If you ask me right now to name 10 teams I think can win a national championship, I'll tell you that Kentucky is one of those 10.
I got them in there for sure.
But if you tell me right now to name me the 10 best bodies of work or resumes in the country, Kentucky's not sniffing that right now. The resume does not match the potential.
All right, so this is an interesting situation with Kentucky, because I didn't realize they were, relatively speaking, that low in the metrics across the board. They're not registering as a top 15 team. They're absolutely one of the 10 most entertaining teams to watch, and their ceiling, frankly, seems to be top five-ish, but body work isn't there right now, and the predictives aren't as in on them. But yeah, I'd put them in the top 10 most likely. But that is that's interesting, though. The Florida win, GP mentioned, that is a road win, so it carries good weight. The Wilmington win, that's a seed line loss, there's no doubt about it. So yeah, interesting. I think that Kentucky will wind up, it's interesting how Kentucky and Kansas are kind of in the same boat there, right? Blue blood programs that just aren't registering as high as you might think they were, despite, you know, relatively healthy records. Kentucky's 12-3 right now. Losses to Kansas, just took number three to A&M, and then there's the Wilmington one sandwiched in there. So keep that in mind. The next two UK games are Mississippi State, and that's at Rupp, and then Georgia at Rupp before playing at South Carolina. At Arkansas, we'll certainly have reason to talk about UK before we get out of January there. I will note Antonio Reeves, he had 5 3-pointers against A&M and also played pretty, pretty well. Go to the other side of the country. Another blue blood level kind of program, Arizona losing to Washington State. Now, it's not a surprise that on the show on Friday, gave you at least a little heads up to keep an eye on it. 73-70. Arizona is now 12-4 overall. It's 3-2 in the blah Pac-12. And yet Arizona is a team, in part because of how it's been able to blow out so many squads, that predictives are still in on here. Meanwhile, Washington State, not exactly a tournament resume yet, but it did jump from 65-51 in the net overnight. So good job there. Where do you have Arizona now? And a quick aside conversation that I at least wanted to place at your doorstep here. Zona is 12-4, but here's how it's gone since mid-December. Loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, win, loss. Do we think that Tommy Lloyd will get Arizona back on track to this level, Parrish, where we're going to have either like a minimum, call it a 7-game win streak, or if shy of that, you know, winning 10 out of 11, even if they can't put, like, do you think that Arizona still will have this in them given the conference that it plays in? Because I'm now hesitating on that, and I probably would have said otherwise prior to the game on Saturday.
I do believe in Arizona. I do think they'll go on some winning streak of note. I don't know if it'll be 5 games or 8 games, but they'll do one of those. I think they'll win the league. I still think they'll win the league by multiple games. But they are, you know, after starting 8-0, just 4-4 in their past 8, with 3 of those losses coming to currently unranked teams. They are like 5-3 in quadrant one, though. Like, they got big wins. Duke, Wisconsin, Utah, Alabama, Michigan State. Again, only Purdue has more quadrant one wins than Arizona. But the losses are starting to stack up. I've got them 10th, to answer your initial question. The wins are still strong. I've got them still in the top 10 of the top 25 and one. But they're the only Pac-12 team I have in right now. Utah just the outside looking in, and I considered Oregon based on a 5-start in the Pac-12. But the Ducks are just 3-2 in the first two quadrants, and then they got a quadrant 3 loss to Santa Clara. They've got some winning streak right now, but still 0 wins over top 50 net teams. So not enough there yet for me to get Oregon in. I would actually have Utah ahead of Oregon right now in my rankings, but both Oregon and Utah out of the top 25 and one. Got Arizona still in the top 10, though.
Yeah, I think Utah is better than Oregon, but we'll note, as GP just said, Oregon undefeated in the Pac-12, 5-0, the only undefeated team in that league. Oregon and Arizona are scheduled to clash in Eugene at the end of the month. Keep an eye on that. Let's stick out west here. Let's talk Mountain West one more time here, because a couple of really a three-pack of results here over the weekend that I think is notable. Boise State wins at Nevada on Friday, so 64-56 win. That was significant. It helped to the point where now the top six teams in the league have played exactly 100 games as of this podcast and have won 84 of them. 84-16 combined record for the six best teams in the Mountain West. Hashtag six bid Mountain West. It's becoming a thing, Parrish. Better than 35% chance per Torvik as of Sunday to be a six bid league. Five bid is even better than that, and it is really cruising toward that. On CBS, New Mexico took out San Diego State. Lobos are 14-3. I thought that was another huge development toward a potential six-bid Mountain West. Jalen House at 26, Jamal Mashburn Jr. 19. JT Toppin had himself a game. It was a convincing performance for the Lobos, who got a good push in the first half, and it was great to hear Raph on the call, by the way, in the pit. I wondered aloud if he had actually been there, and then coincidentally enough, later in the broadcast, he said, yeah, indeed, he had been on hand, on site, which is no surprise after the fact, but for the 83 Final Four, where NC State obviously famously won that title that year.
Raph's been everywhere.
I know. Well, I actually would wonder, like, when it comes to him, like,
I would have assumed it's the pit and there was some sort of NCAA tournament thing there. Right. I would have, because I do think at this point in my career, the one place I've never been that I wish I could get to is the pit. I think I've been everywhere else. No, that's not true. Hilton Coliseum, I've never been. I'd like to see Hilton Coliseum. I'd like to see the pit.
I answered this in a court report, and the answer was Bud Walton. I got there this season. The pit's up there. I don't know what my number one would be, but Pitt would be like top three. I've never been to Illinois. I want to get there.
I've been to Illinois.
As an aside, I do wonder what are the two or three most notable arenas, if they even exist, that Raftery has never gone to? And if they're not notable, has he ever gone to? Can't figure that Raph's ever been at Oregon State, you know, that kind of stuff. just generally, maybe, you know, I might hunt him down and ask him. Anyway, the win snapped a seven game. The win for New Mexico snapped San Diego State 7-game win streak. And one of the keys in that game was Jaden Ledee, who was averaging. He went into the game averaging 22. He was held to 15 points, had 4 turnovers, and just a good job by New Mexico overall. And then the third part of this is Utah State winning at UNLV. So I don't know if you saw it, Parrish, or not, but it was outrageous. So Utah State was trailing most of the game, was down by as many as 13 in the second half at Vegas, down 4 with less than 10 seconds to go. Darius Brown for Utah State, he makes a 3-pointer. And they're down by, so when the ball leaves his hand, Utah State is down 4 on the road at UNLV. The 3 goes in. As that's happening, one of the great names in the sport, great Osabor for Utah State, winds up getting an off-ball foul. So he is the victim to a little bit of a shove, a 50-50 call maybe, to be honest. But he is fouled. It's a separate incident to the shot itself. So the 3 counts, Osabor goes to the line. He makes both of them. So Utah State, and I don't want to say we never see this, but it's just rare. It's like it feels like a once-a-season thing at best. Down 4, has a 5-point play, and then UNLV still had time to take it back, but missed the shot at the buzzer, what would have been the game winner there. Osabor had 24-14. His free throws gave Utah State its only lead of the game. Ian Martinez also had 24 for Utah State, and he had 6 3-pointers on 8 shots. A really a hell of an escape. Like, Utah State's tournament resume would have been mildly dinked, but even more so, Parrish. Mountain West, we've talked about them recently. Why not? Hell, why not again? They'll be on the league will be featured yet again this upcoming weekend on CBS. Are you with me? 6 bids. It's a possible thing. After you said in the preseason, I think I gave you over under 4.5 at large is outside the Big Six, and you heartily and enthusiastically took the under. The Mountain West itself might hit the over, my friend.
Yeah, I think I might have been misguided. I think it's possible I was misguided.
I was wrong.
Feels like I might have been misguided a little bit. Hey, if we were starting the tournament today,
I'd have six in if it was today.
Yeah.
I'd have six in. Yeah, which is wild, but if you look at the resumes, it's justified at this point.
Absolutely. I mean, I've got three of them in the top 25 and one. Got Utah State all the way up at 14th. Hey, here's a little thing to keep an eye on out there, you little poll watchers. Watch, keep an eye on this tomorrow. Utah State, tell me who's got a better resume right now, okay? Team A or Team B?
All right, let's blind. Hold on, blind. Hold on a second.
Oh, it's a blind
January
resume.
January 14th, and we've already. Yeah. I'm already calling out media members for saying you don't want to see this team in a tournament that does not start for two more months. Okay. All right, can we dial down that you don't want to see them in the tournament? And now you're going blind resume.
You know what? You know what the funniest thing about you don't want to see them in the tournament is? Is that about half the time somebody says it, I go, I wouldn't mind seeing that team in the tournament. About half the time somebody says it, I don't even agree with the premise.
It's like a team fighting for its life to get into Dayton. You do not want to see these guys in the tournament.
No, I know. I would love to see these guys. Please let me play them. They stink. Please. I don't even agree with the premise half the time. It's blind resume time. Team A. Okay. Yeah. Team A.
Yeah.
Is, 2-1 in quadrant one, 4-0 in quadrant two. So 6-1 in the first two quadrants, no additional losses. 6-1 in the first two quadrants, no losses outside of quadrant one. Team two is 2-2 in quadrant one, 1-0 in quadrant two. So 3-2 in the first two quadrants with a quadrant three loss as well. So I got 6-1 in the first two quadrants, no additional losses, or 3-2 in the first two quadrants with a quadrant three loss.
Okay, so obviously team one's Utah State, right?
Right.
Okay, so who are they going up against? I'll say with a quad three loss, you said?
Yeah, we just talked about him.
Oh, well then.
Kentucky. It's Kentucky.
It is Kentucky. Okay, I was scanning here for two lost teams. Okay,
there is no, I could put that blind resume and we could frame it a million different ways. Yeah. And the only thing you would be able to say is, well, I think team B's got a bigger win, it looks like, than team A. But in terms of entire bodies of work, it's not even close. Team A over Team B. Everybody would agree. Team A is Utah State. Team B is Kentucky. See which one is rated higher in Monday's AP poll. Kentucky will be higher than Utah State, and it'll be wrong. I've got Utah State 14th in the top 25 and one. I've got Kentucky 15th.
Okay, look at that. And Utah State.
Go Aggies.
Go Aggies. Utah State, by the way, tied for the nation's longest active winning streak. Trivia time. What's the other school? You might have seen, maybe you've seen it, maybe not. There's another school, not a high major, tied for Utah State, 15 straight wins.
UMass Lowell.
Not UMass Lowell. Let me see if UMass Lowell is even on a one. Let's see if it's even on a skid right now. UMass Lowell sitting there at 12-4.
Mississippi Riverhawks.
Game win streak for the Mississippi Riverhawks there, coming off a win Saturday, 86-82 at home over UMBC. The answer is, of course, Bucky McMillan's Samford Bulldogs, who won 134-96. They have won 15 in a row. And I got one more Burson drop for you. So per Jared Burson, Samford's 134 points are the most by a Division I team in a regulation conference game since Troy beat Chicago State. Who the hell knew Troy and Chicago State were in the same conference? 140-131 in the Mid-Continent Conference. You grew up on the Mid-Continent Conference, didn't you? It's now the Summit League. No. Back in
Jared
January,
Burson, for people who don't know, he invented ESPN Stats and Info.
He did not, and two, he no longer works there, but he still has access to this entire database. We appreciate it, Jared. Back in January of 95 was the last time an intra-conference game that didn't go to OT saw a team hit at least 134. Samford beat VMI 134-96 to win its 15th in a row. Congrats to Samford. Couple more whip arounds here before we get out of here. At least want to note that Georgia was angling for its first 11-game winning streak since 1947-48. Holy crap, dude. But it didn't happen. They had won 10 in a row. They were down early to Tennessee. Then they took the lead after trailing, I think, by 14 in the first half. And then Georgia went ice cold. It missed 12 of its final 13 shots. Tennessee hit 7 of its final 9 shots. Tennessee ended the game on a 15-1 run. Tennessee got a road win against Georgia. Dalton Knecht has now come back to life. He had hit a little bit of a slump there, but now he has 64 points in his past two games. He had 36 against Georgia. That's a big time win for Tennessee on the road against a Georgia team that might well go to the NIT. This is the kind of game where, like, you had it, you get this win, maybe you can start building up a tournament resume because there's some empty calories on a Georgia non-con, but didn't happen. Good win by the Vols.
It was up 6:09 to play. It was 75-64 Georgia, and then UT closes on a 21-4 run. Went from down 11 to 6-point winners. Kinnett gets 36 points on 20 shots. Oh, but people been on me for Tennessee too high. You've got Tennessee too high. So, you know, about middle of the way, second half on Saturday, just sitting around watching basketball, doing expense reports, trying to, you know, hang out with my kids. My phone just popping wild. Oh, look, Parrish, you watching the Vols? I guess after they lose, you'll move them up to number two. You know, that kind of stuff. I didn't say a word. And then the game went final, and I was like, well, surely these people will at least delete it. You know, nothing. Never hear from them again. They ain't say nothing. Tennessee came roaring back. Nice victory on the road.
What do we got upcoming for Monday, Tuesday? Let's get a little viewer's guide in here, GP. What do people need to know about?
Well, Monday's a national holiday.
It is.
Dr. Martin Luther King Day. I'm here in New York for a rare Monday appearance. We got games all day on CBS Sports Network. George Mason at George Washington, LaSalle at St. Joe's, American at Loyola, Maryland, North Carolina A&T at Hampton. Elsewhere around the country, Ohio State at Michigan. Oh, there's two big brands that could use a win, huh?
We've got a doubleheader on Fox, noon Eastern Fox, Ohio State at Michigan. Ohio State's got an NCAA tournament, hopeful future. Michigan does not. And then we've got Villanova at Marquette, 2:30 Eastern on Fox. And both those teams also find themselves in a relatively, you know, as urgent, I guess, as it could be in mid-January here. But Marquette, you know, trying not to have more losses by January 15th than it had through the entire regular season last year.
Just realized it'll be one of these rare opportunities where I'll be in studio with J.J. Watt.
J.J. Watt going to dip in? Well, what will happen, I assume, here because of the Bills.
The game got moved to Monday.
Right. And apparently, although our own Jonathan Jones said earlier on Sunday, while the plan is to play this game Monday, I guess it's not out of the question that maybe it even gets bumped even later. If that does not happen, there's something called the bullpen, which is a viewing room where everyone goes to because there's two different studios. So you might be you and JJ Watt on the same bullpen row there. That's quite a vision.
I'm gonna tackle JJ Watt tomorrow.
That will not be happening.
Although I'll tackle JJ Watt just to see if I can do it. I just want to test myself, you know.
Yeah, I advise against it. But if you feel like
I want to test myself.
Yeah, I feel like there have been people that have tried that on JJ before, and
I want to start with the best. I want to make sure I'm challenging myself properly.
I don't know if they've lived to tell the tale. So as long as it just don't make it an HR violation, that's all I'm asking for you, bud. All right.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to say anything inappropriate. I'm just going to tackle him.
Yeah, I know, but is that not an HR violation? Just a blind
no, side tackle? No. I think today in corporate America, you can tackle people. You just can't say anything.
Okay, fair enough.
I think that's where we're at now. It's okay. You can tackle people now, but buddy, you better not call them something.
Okay. What do we have on Tuesday?
Oh man, this is Purdue at Indiana.
Listen. That's a 7 Eastern tip, and it's not a tournament team right now, but you win this game at home, things change a little bit. Got it on the home floor. They did it last season. If memory serves correctly, I believe Indiana beat Purdue last season when Zach Edey and Co. walked into that building. So we'll see if they can go back to that.
I think Indiana beat them a million times last season. The Blue Blood program at home, what more do you need? I assume Indiana, it should be no problem. It's a Blue Blood program at home.
I'm not going that far. What else?
It's a blue blood program at home. What's the problem?
Okay.
I'm not picking against a blue blood program at home.
Well, I don't think we're picking this game, period. It's a Sunday show.
I know, but I'm just saying, just so you know, going forward, I'll never pick against a blue blood program at home.
I do not.
You think I got idiot tattooed across my forehead? Ah!
What else we got on Tuesday?
Baylor at Kansas State.
That's a good one.
It's another meeting between Scott Drew and Jerome Tang.
First of all, I got my doc up, so I'm not looking at the video. It sounded like you're about to choke up at the idea of these guys reuniting to coach.
I was. No, we've just reached the point in the season where sometimes when I'm talking, I just lose my breath. Okay. It happens every year. I'll just be talking, and then I can't speak anymore.
Just run out of air?
Yeah, just run out of air. I just run out of air.
Breathing, how does it work?
It's tough, man. It's tough. Breathing's harder than you think. The older you get.
Actually, I think it's the one thing that it's not, because you do it subconsciously without even knowing it. I don't think.
I have to think about it. Okay. I have to constantly think about breathing, or else I'll just stop. St. John's at Seton Hall.
All right, let's get on this one. It's 8:30 Eastern on Tuesday. Seton Hall has won 5 straight. It is tied with UConn atop the Big East. Kadari Richmond's looking good. Providence is slipping. Seton Hall is now rising and has effectively replaced Providence in that NCAA tournament conversation there. 13 blocks against Butler, the most by any opponent against BU this season. Good win for Seton Hall. It's had a relatively good success against that program over the years. So we've got St. John's playing at Seton Hall. And St. John's went on the road over the weekend, played against Creighton. It was a really good game, almost got the win, but wasn't able to pull it out. So now St. John's is one game behind in the Big East. I believe Nada has the video here. This got shared a bit. If you didn't hear it, or even if you didn't, you want to hear it again, Patino has been exceptionally good with the media since getting the St. John's job. Very quotable. We've highlighted him on the show. And I don't fully understand the setup of the question, but I think I can understand why this kind of got asked, because it's a tough game on the road against a tournament opponent, and Patino knows it's been a building job. So maybe the reporters kind of asked, hey, what can you learn? Are you satisfied with the effort? Nada, why don't you cue up what Patino says here? And by the way, this is an earmuffs situation for any kiddos with you. So hit that fast forward maybe a couple times. This is an earmuffs situation. Go ahead, Nada. Die of frostbite. First of all, many ways to go.
Man, I would not want to go with frostbite. The studio's cold every night, and that makes me uncomfortable. I can't imagine what frostbite would be like.
How about that one from Patino, man? Man, oh man, he's giving us something every single week.
Hey, I get him not wanting moral victories, but like broadly speaking, you watch St. John's lose at Creighton and you walk away from that going, that's a good basketball team.
Yeah, absolutely. But I guess that's what makes Patino in that, like, dropping the F-bomb and him hating. And that is absolutely something that's true. There's a clip from when he was coaching over in Greece that I came across a few weeks ago that I just watched. And knowing where he is now and where he was then in his life and his career, it's just so interesting to watch after that, because he is in it, man. It's a video clip from him in the huddle, just going after his team and chewing their asses out. And same guy he's always been. If you thought that because Patino got back into the limelight, back at the power conference level, has St. John's doing decently well, and that there might be a certain level of contentness with his life, there might be, like, broadly speaking, but the guy, I guess, just can't stand losing. He also had, let me share this too. We don't have the video of this, but I'm gonna read this, because this whatever is going on, and I don't fully understand it, and part of me almost wonders if, like, Hurley and Patino are in on the bit, but this developing alpha dog rivalry that is happening here is wild. So this is Zach Braziller, who does a great job covering St. Johnson, has for a long time for the New York Post. Here's Patino after the loss. Quote, "I don't yell at officials during the game. This is going to sound absolutely berserk. I think it's a form of cheating when you're trying to get calls on every play and cursing at the referees, inciting the crowd. I don't believe in that," end quote. Okay, listen, welcome any and all Patino content, but the man has the capacity to just say things that are utterly either not based in reality or completely tossing aside things that he has done himself. And this is the latest example of it. And the fact that he thinks going after the officials is a form of cheating. You're going to tell me that I can't pull up, Parrish, 1,000 instances of Patino chewing out a ref?
I will say this. One of my favorite memories of being a Memphis beat writer involved this kind of stuff. I've told this story before. I'll try to give the quick version, but it's like Memphis against at Louisville is coming up this week, and we're on the Conference USA media call on Monday afternoon or whatever day it was. And it's like, John, and the way that would work is, they'd introduce him and join us now is Memphis coach John Calipari. Coach Calipari, thanks for joining us. Push *9 if you have a question. Coach Calipari, your opening comments. And Louisville's like ranked in the top 10 or something. Somebody can fact check all this, but Louisville's good. Memphis is a little shaky, and it's Memphis at Louisville, I think in Freedom Hall, but maybe Yum Center, but I think it was so far back it was Freedom Hall. So it's like opening comments. John comes on and goes, well, listen, Louisville's obviously great. The thing that's going to give us a chance though, is we've got a Final Four crew on the game. I mean, the refs that have been assigned to this game, it's like it might as well be a Final Four game. And so I now know at least we've got a shot, right? They're not going to let them grab them. They're not going to let them grab us and hold us and grab us and hold us and grab us and hold us. Cause like that's what they do. And when they get away with that, you got no shot. And so I'm just glad we have a Final Four crew on this game. Cause I know like opening whistle, as soon as we get going, when they grab us, they're going to blow the whistle and they're just not going to let them play that way. And as long as they don't let them play that way, we've got a shot. All right. Fast forward, game starts. And it's foul. I mean, they call like immediately a bunch of fouls on Louisville. Like there's multiple players in foul trouble. Patino is furious. And after the game, Patino said, it might have been even before the game, but certainly at some point Patino said, that is the, like, I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember the exact words, but it's like, that is the most classless thing I've ever seen. He was working the refs on a media conference call earlier in the week. And it's like, that John Calipari, you just pull the little string in his back and see what words will come out. And it was like a thing, but he was furious at John for working the refs even before the game even started.
It's good stuff right there, man. And Patino Hurley, I don't even know how real this is, but it can never be Patino Calipari because that at its apex was true, just hate fuel. But this is a great thing for college basketball and for the Big East. They meet in the guard. They obviously previously met back. UConn hosted the game a couple days before Christmas. They play again in February. St. John's at Seton Hall is a big game on Tuesday night. Two more to watch. Iowa State plays at.
Just one last thing I was going to say on Rick, and then we'll move on. Because you made the point about you watched a clip of him in Greece. And he was like in it and like you're watching him and he's this weekend at Creighton and where everybody's going, man, St. John's looks good. He just can't. He can't appreciate that because he can't deal with the loss. One of the things I've learned about Rick over the years that I wouldn't have assumed about him, but once you spend time talking to him and being around him a little bit, one of the things I learned about Rick is he is super rich and super famous. Because he is in a profession where if you're great at it, you will be super rich and super famous. But this would be his profession no matter what. He's a basketball coach.
Yes.
Like, don't ever forget, he was just coaching at Iona with all the money in the world. He doesn't need to work. He can't stand not being in the gym. I talked to him one time in that brief time where he was actually out. And he was like, I'm just bored out of my mind. He said, people think I miss like the games and putting on the suits, and being on TV. He's like, I miss the individual workouts. I miss the practices. He is a super famous, super wealthy basketball coach. But if basketball coaches made $80,000 a year, I think he would still be a basketball coach making $80,000 a year. He loves coaching. And that's why he's still able to do it at an extremely high level this deep into his career.
Yeah, Patino, just keep. Yeah, that's great. That's a great point there, Parrish. And as long as he can keep giving us weekly quotes, that would be incredible. I mean, he name dropped Trilly Donovan on the conference. Just incredible stuff there. Two more to get you out on Tuesday. Iowa State at BYU, 9 Eastern, and then Utah State at New Mexico, 10:30 Eastern on Tuesday. A couple really good games there and the latest in the Mountain West. Before we get out of here, okay, you got any other thoughts on college hoops from the weekend? Or are you done?
I think I'm done.
Okay, because we gotta address something here. Nada, can you just play the video? And then I'm going to ask Parrish the questions here. Just play the video because we got to Something's fishy.
Well, he's right here, ladies and gentlemen, Gary Parrish and Bennett Doyle from Grind City Media's Gary Parrish Show. And tonight, they're going head-to-head with Ralph and Austin in Gary Parrish's Trivia Challenge. All right, the rules are simple. I'm going to ask some questions. The first to raise their paddle and answer three correct questions is going to be the winner. Are you guys ready? Question number one. Who is the head coach of the 1987 NCAA Men's Basketball Champions?
Gary?
That would be the Hall of Fame legend, also controversial, late great Bobby Knight.
That is correct. It's 1-0. All right, next. How many times has a 15 seed beat a 2 seed in the NCAA tournament? Gary?
If you count last season, that's going to take us up to 11 because Princeton has a 15 seed upset Arizona.
That is correct. It's 2-0. You guys need to get on the work here. All right. Next question. Jacob Gilliard holds the all-time NCAA steals record. How many steals did he record? All right. Gary?
So he played 5 years of college. And he had a career high 108 in that fifth year, so it's 466, I believe.
466 is correct.
That was the biggest load of crap I've ever heard.
Okay. What is going on? Okay, before you're even talking here, I see this video late last night, right when I'm about ready to turn in. Thankfully, it was Trivia Challenge, because I swear to you, if I heard Trivia Time, I wasn't even letting you on the pod today. So thank you. If that was your call, you know I wouldn't have been okay with it if it was Trivia Time. So it was Trivia Challenge. Explain yourself. There ain't no way in hell that you knew the answers to those. So what is the purpose of this?
Well, the first thing you got to remember is that Jacob Gilliard played 5 years of college basketball. So the numbers are going to be abnormally high. Yeah. Then you got to remember that he had 108 in that last year or whatever it was. It got us to. I'm just smart. Sometimes I'm smarter than people realize.
What the fuck? Okay, then here, trivia time.
Okay.
All right. Who was the head coach of the team that won it all in 1988? I mean,
Larry Brown.
There we go. That was the easy one. Okay. Who was the first 15 seed to win an NCAA? You know, every single one. You know how many times it's happened?
Yeah.
What was the team? What was the year? Who was the loser? Give it to me.
Well, I know Missouri. I know Missouri got caught that one time.
That was about the seventh time that it happened. I need the first time a 15 ever beat a 2, Mr. Trivia Challenge.
Yeah, that was UMass Lowell. I was wrong.
Richmond, 91. Who'd they beat?
Yeah, that was they beat I was wrong.
Syracuse.
That's right.
That's
Syracuse.
What I thought. One more. You had all the numbers on Jacob Gilliard. I'm not even going to ask you for the numbers. I'm just going to say the other side on the defense. Who's the all-time blocks leader in men's D1 history?
He's got a weird name.
It took you 6 seconds to give me the Gilliard stuff. I figured this can't take long.
It's a big fella.
It is a big fella. That's right.
Yeah. it's a big fella. It's a mid-major big fella.
Liar! No. Jarvis Varnado, Mississippi State, 2006.
Oh, man, I know Jarvis Varnado.
Shouts to Derek in the chat. He got it there. Okay, explain yourself. What the hell was this? It was rigged. Why was it even rigged to begin with? And what were you doing? What were you doing there?
I don't know. I was just asked, can you be there on the 13th? We're going to do Grizzly social media night. I said, sure. And so I took my little guy. And then at halftime, we played Simon Says. You ever seen this guy, Steve, that plays Simon Says? He pulls people out of the crowd.
Yeah. If you've been to a college sporting event, or maybe an NBA event. This has been a thing for at least, I want to say, a decade. Brings a whole bunch. Go ahead. Continue up, but I've seen it a couple times.
Yeah. Okay. So last night, trivia happens second time out, first quarter, right? So the rest of the night, I'm walking around FedEx Forum, my little guy, and I've got this yellow hoodie on, so it stands out. And people are like, hey, GP, that was amazing. People are very impressed at my trivia. Yeah, exactly. Because if you don't know any better, if you don't know anything about me, you might think I really do know all that stuff. So
massive fraud on an unsuspecting populace.
So then we go, we play Simon Says, and I get put out pretty quickly. All right. And that was that. This morning, I get on my flight. All right. And I'm half asleep. You know, it's an early flight and I've barely slept. And I just get on my flight, AirPods, I sit down and I'm in my seat and I'm looking, you know, I got a hat on and I'm not paying attention to anything. These two guys are walking. The plane's boarding. These two guys are boarding. I swear to God, this is true. These two guys are boarding. And one of them goes, I can hear him say to his buddy, he goes, hey, that's the guy from last night. The guy that played Simon Says. And I looked up and I went, hey, what's up, guys?
And it was Jacob Gilliard.
Steve from Simon Says was sitting right behind me. They weren't even talking about me. They didn't know who I was.
Oh, that's epic. Oh, that's beautiful. They're not even talking about you.
No,
it's amazing.
The Simon Says guy was seated directly behind me, and they just walked right past me. They didn't care about me at all. There's one other time that happened. Beautiful. I was at youth baseball, like my little guy's baseball games. And, you know, it's not abnormal for somebody to come over and say, hey, I'd like the show, stuff like that, whatever. That does happen sometimes. So this guy, I'm walking around and I've got a shirt on it. It's like a blue shirt. It says Dunder Mifflin on it. It's a simple shirt, right? So I'm just walking around the baseball park and the guy looks at me and he goes, oh, man, that's my favorite show. And I said, hey, what's up? And he goes, my favorite show, man. Man, show is so funny. Every time, man, so funny. I said, I swear to God, oh, man, I appreciate that. I'm Gary. What's your name? He goes, I'm Jimmy. I said, it's nice to meet you, Jimmy. He goes, man, I love The Office. Had no idea who I was.
Little humble pie. Every so often ain't the worst thing for the diet. I love that stuff, man. I think that might even be a previously told bit on the podcast, but I know that shirt. You've worn that shirt on this show before.
Yeah. No, I never wear it again. I never wear it again. I'm not going to get confused like that again.
No, you absolutely do need to wear it again. We are almost done. Why was the game rigged for you?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't really know what we were doing. I was asked if I could be there, and they said it's going to be trivia. I honestly thought I was going to be asking the questions. I thought I was going to be hosting a trivia thing. And so then they were like, well, do you want the answers then? And I was like, well, yeah, I don't want to look stupid in front of, you know, 14,000 people. So sure. And so then they sent me the answers. And then when I got there last night, they were like, all right, it's you and Bennett against these two other guys. And I was like, I know all the answers. So then I just played it. I just played along with it.
Oh, well, there you have it. That's a show.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry MF and Teagle, legend. Shouts to Huck and Larnell. Thank you guys once again for listening and watching the Ion College Basketball Podcast. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple and Spotify. There's more of us than there are of them. That needs to be reflected in the comments. Shouts to Simon Says Steve. We'll talk to you again real soon. Till then, take care.
Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount+.
Yes!